How to sum up 2021? It began with Delta and it ends with Omicron. But in amongst our lockdown living lives, there was plenty of sport to keep us sane. From a Tokyo Olympics we never would have imagined to feats that were supposed to be impossible, athletes still managed to put smiles on our faces. Welcome everyone to Sportspiel's Review of the Year 2021. Okay, 2021, one hell of a year that we're not really going to try it and sum up, but in a sporting context, we're going to pick out some of our favourite moments. Joining me on the podcast today is, of course, my podcasting partner in crime, Will Moulton. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you feeling? Reflective as the year almost comes to an end?
I'm glad 2021 is over in a lot of ways, personal and sort of the world, the way the world has been. I think it's been a brutal year, but the one thing that we've had to get us through is fortunately an incredible amount of sport to watch. And I just think from us, we just should be so grateful to the, and I know everyone says that athletes make sacrifices and what have you to get to the top, but actually what a lot of athletes have had to do this year, isolation bubbles and, you know, even just making sure that they were able to go out to tournaments and not testing, they were sacrificing even more than they normally would. So, and putting on a great spectacle for us on so many different occasions in so many different sports. So very, very grateful to every single athlete who's done that this year, because for me, I think it's been the only thing that's kept me going in what's been an absolutely brutal year. The options, you know, watch seemingly every sport has been up and running at some point. And yeah, having an Olympic and a Paralympic Games has certainly helped and provided us with a lot of national pride, which we don't have in many other respects anymore.
Yeah. I don't know what respects you're referring to. Perhaps I'm alluding to a conversation we had just before we started recording. But wholeheartedly agree with that. If anyone was in any doubt as to how dedicated athletes are to their individual sports, this last year and 2020 has probably reinforced that in a way like no other. Like you say, it's not just about making all those sacrifices to be at peak performance and the brutal training schedules that a lot of them take part in. You've also now got to contend with COVID bubbles, all the other rules and regulations that often change very frequently on top of everything else. And just to go through all of that, as well as what they were doing anyway, just to perform at the very best and give us sports fans something to look forward to, something to give us a bit of respite away from the chaos that the world still likes to chuck out at us every now and again. You already alluded to it, but likewise, as a sports fan, it's been a massive help throughout this entire year. And as we also said just before we started recording it, you do forget sometimes that 2021 essentially started with a 3-month lockdown in probably some of the grimmest periods in all of our lives.
I mean, and being part-time furloughed during a lockdown was also not fun.
That as well. And just, you know, the dark nights and just basically living the same day on repeat every single day for a prolonged amount of time. Thankfully, we are all, I like to think, in a better place, despite Omicron coming along and throwing another spanner in the works. But hopefully that's, we won't be seeing some sort of return to what it was at the very start of 2021 anyway. And hopefully with 2022 on the horizon, lots more things to look forward to. But not all doom and gloom in terms of 2021. Like I said, sport gave us a lot of happiness and a lot of exciting moments, which we are going to look back on in our review of the year. I think this is the fourth one we've done now, something like that. Maybe even fifth.
It might be the fifth. If we're 17, 18, 19, yeah. Fifth review of the year.
Fifth one, right. Can't count early doors. That's always good. We've got four categories that we're going to go through. People who will have heard previous reviews of the year kind of know how it goes, in that we've got two runners-up, so to speak, in each of our categories that we'll put forward. And then we've each got one winner for each of the categories who we think is very, very deserving of that crown, that award, which we know comes on a par with such accolades like Sports Personality of the Year. So it can be pride of place on these individual athletes' awards charts as well. The four categories we've got this year are Best Sporting Moment, Most Inspiring Moment, Team of the Year, and Athlete of the Year. So without further ado, shall we dive into category number one, which is Best Sporting Moment of the Year? And would you like to give me your first runner-up?
Yeah, so my first runner-up, as a massive Formula One fan since the age of about two, this season has been brilliant for so many reasons. To see two different teams competing at the top, to see two different drivers going toe-to-toe quite literally throughout the entire season.
Toe-to-toe, wheel-to-wheel, wheel-on-head, all of those.
It's been madness, and there have been a lot of good races and a lot of overtaking, which is something that's a little bit rare now in Formula One. Some crazy races as well, but the one that really stands out to me and is not necessarily the one that was the greatest spectacle. I think if you want to go for drama, you probably go for the 2021 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. But as a fanatic and as a pure fan of the sport, it was a little bit too soap opera like for me, that race. It was a bit ridiculous. Whereas a race a couple of rounds previously was the race that stood out for me, and that was the 2021 Brazilian Grand Prix. And that's where we saw just the fighting strength of Lewis Hamilton and just how good a driver he is. And I think, you know, some of his wheel-to-wheel combat has been criticised this year. And I think you could say that the Silverstone crash with Verstappen was largely his fault. And there's a couple of instances where he's been a bit clumsy in his overtakes. But he was imperious in Brazil, and the way he fought back twice, having been disqualified after qualifying, to then finish 20th, to start from 20th in the sprint race, to then get all the way up to 5th, was incredible. To take 15 places in 17 laps, then another 5-place demotion for a gearbox change, starting from 10th, coming through to win the race despite some robust defence from Verstappen, which led to a precedent being set of how aggressively you can defend your position, which again needs to be looked at. But just an amazing race, an amazing weekend for the sport. I think over the course of the season, Verstappen did deserve to win the title. I think he was the better driver throughout the whole year, but I think that Brazilian Grand Prix was where we saw Hamilton at his best, and that's where we saw, you know, a slightly manufactured race in that Hamilton was having to come from behind because of various penalties. But actually, we just saw the class of him, the skill and speed of the man, and also, you know, the willingness from Verstappen to do what it takes to win the title, and just a classic race in a season of exceptional drama. How about you, Alistair?
Yeah, I mean, that, like I say, there was plenty of drama in that season, having worked to the final weekend of it. My first runner-up, not Formula One, is Sarah Story, who rightly has been getting plenty of plaudits again for everything she has achieved in her career. But the particular moment that I'm harking to is when she won the road race to secure her third gold of the Tokyo 2020 brackets, 2021, as we always have to refer to it as, the Paralympics, where she, like I say, her third gold, but her 17th overall, which made her the most successful British Paralympian of all time. Rightly nominated for Sports Personality of the Year. She's done so much in her career, 44 years old now. I think she referred to herself as the granny among the group ahead of the ceremony, but she certainly isn't, still pretty much in her prime. And she said herself, I think there's still more to come from her as well. Easy to forget that her maiden appearance was as a swimmer at the 1992 Paralympics Games, the year I was born. So
3 years before I was born.
Yeah, put that one in there for context. So it does show you just how much time her career spans, but also just how gloriously successful it has been. To chuck some other statistics out there in terms of what she's done: 29 times a world champion, that's a lot of times, 21 times a European champion, and like I say, she is not done there yet. So in terms of a champion for just Paralympic sport, but also women's sport in general, cycling, swimming before that, you will not find more of an inspiring individual than Sarah Story. And that moment where she did officially become the most successful British Paralympian of all time is definitely one that will stand long in the memory. And we hark back to sacrifices and things like that at the start of this pod. Think how much time and dedication has gone into that effort at the same time. So huge kudos to Sarah Story from myself.
Yeah, an amazing woman. And what I love about that in particular is that you say she's 44 years old and she's still performing at her best. So much in sport is said about age, and you know, you get to 30 and you deteriorate, and it's just amazing and brilliant to see so many people proving that wrong. Sarah Story being one, James Anderson in the cricket being another. I know that the men's Ashes hasn't gone very well, but he's 39 years old and he's got a bowling average of 13 runs per wicket away from home this year, which, considering he's bowled in Sri Lanka, India and Australia, is incredible. And it's just so good to have people getting rid of that stupid narrative that you can't be a professional athlete over the age of 30, because you can, quite clearly.
Yeah, you definitely can.
My runner-up sporting moment is, it's not a singular moment, it happened over a two, three weeks, but was England's women obliterating New Zealand this year. So New Zealand's long been the world number one. I think England briefly took that position back in 2017, 2018 for a few months, and then New Zealand took it back when they won the World Cup that year. And English women's rugby is accelerating in terms of its professionalism, its following, and also the skill that's on show. And I think it's been difficult to gauge how good this English team have become, because over the last couple of years, they've only mainly been competing in the Six Nations, and other than France, because they're the only two professional teams, it's difficult for the other four teams to really give them a good match at the moment. Hopefully things will change. I know there's been a lot of talk amongst the Irish women's team about the way they're being treated at the moment, and the Welsh yeah. women as well. And finally, the Welsh women have got some professional contracts, although it's not enough.
It's not many.
No.
But it's something.
It is a start. But I think going into this series with New Zealand, I think a lot of people are expecting it to be tough and close. I think people were expecting England to win, but the manner in which they did it was unbelievable. And this is such an exciting team. And the thing was, you look at the 23 players in the matchday squad that were there for New Zealand, and then you can name probably another 15 that weren't there, either because they weren't picked or they were injured and things like that. And the conveyor belt of talent as well, now coming through the Premier 15s, now that that's been a bit more professionalised. And you know, we've had the big game the other day, Harlequins playing Wasps at London, the Twickenham Stadium. And I know that wasn't a perfect affair. I know there's been a lot mentioned about the timings of the hospitality lunches being at the same time as the women's game kicking off, and the women seemingly wearing men's kit. A lot has been made about these sorts of things, but to see 9,000 people watching and to see a pretty good game of rugby with a lot of good players involved was great. And yeah, this England team is going places, and to see them thrash New Zealand so spectacularly was just amazing to watch. This is a New Zealand team that's been put on a pedestal for so many years, and to see them get thrashed was incredible. And you just hope that England haven't peaked too soon with the World Cup being delayed by a year. But it's such an exciting time for women's rugby in this country, and just hopefully other nations start to treat their women in the same way England do, and then we can have a greater playing field, more level playing field across the world, because that's what we need. As much as we enjoy one or two teams, you know, playing amazing rugby week in, week out and winning everything, especially if you're English, you want it to be tough and competitive, and that's where the sport needs to go if it's going to be more professional.
Yeah, definitely. They may get a mention later on in this podcast again. Hint. My next runner-up, and I don't think this moment kind of gets the recognition it deserves at the moment, but it's one of my favourites anyway. And that is when Beth Shriver won gold for Team GB at the BMX at Tokyo 2020. That was moments after her teammate Kai White won silver, and he was there to hoist her up into the air. So that was kind of one of the pictures of the games, if you like, certainly from a British perspective anyway. So I just love them. Not mentioned really. at Sports Personality of the Year, but she did win the Sunday Times Young Sportswoman of the Year. So sort of a recognition there of what she has done. But I think if you put that achievement into context, it just adds to what she has managed to do. Not long after becoming Olympic champion, she went on to become world champion. Pretty good effort there. And this is someone who had to crowdfund, basically, for a chance to qualify for Tokyo, as UK Sport had taken the decision a couple of years back now, 2017 rather, to only fund male riders for the Olympic cycle. So she ended up leaving the program as a result and just kind of doing it on her own terms. She also took a part-time teaching assistant role to try and help with that. So combining that with the crowdfunding to qualify and then to go on and become Olympic champion and then very quickly world champion after that. What an effort. She is still only 22, so plenty more to come. But I think the Sunday Times Award kind of sums up what she has done for women's sport, but also the sport of BMX at the same time. She's from the same place that I'm from, so Essex, half an hour away. But you can see just the kind of impact that she has had on a lot of wannabe BMX riders in this area. She's also a very engaging personality at the same time. So that moment when she crossed the line, there's one of my favorite moments of the games. And I think it really needs to get a bit more recognition, particularly with every hurdle that she has had to come through. Again, you add every element of COVID on top of that. Think bubbles, think crowdfunding and everything. That is one hell of an achievement to do what she has done. So my applause to Beth Shriver for everything.
Yep. I will be speaking about that moment slightly later on, so I won't embellish the point too much. But
at least we have both picked out that one, because it enhances my point that people need to talk about it more.
I think part of the problem with it wasn't it on in the middle of the night in the UK?
It was.
So we didn't get to watch it. I think I might have watched it live because we had a hockey match and I was waiting up for it. But yeah, not a lot of people didn't get to watch it live. But just the reaction from her and Kai White to her medal, that's the moment that sticks out. And then, yeah, what she went on and did, and then learning about her backstory. But I'll come back onto that later. So
the win, we mentioned this beforehand. We picked the same one. So I think that was pretty definitive.
We haven't gone too rogue, have we? I haven't gone too rogue, which is quite nice.
But quite frankly, if anyone is picking a moment that's not this, readjust your TV sets, because you missed one hell of a moment.
So the 11th of September 2021 was quite a special day for me personally as well, because after 15 seasons of trying, I hit my first ever century, first ever cricket century. So that was already a good day. And then coming home to watch the women's US Open final. And I don't know about you, but I just had a feeling. I don't know why. I can't explain it. I just thought Raducanu was going to win. But I haven't necessarily named the actual victory for Raducanu as my sporting moment. I think the final itself is for me, the sporting moment, the whole occasion. Some of the list of things, the first all-teenager women's singles final since 1999, the first ever Open Era final to have two unseeded players. Leila Fernandez defeated three top five seeded players on her way to the final, the youngest person to do so since 1999. Raducanu beat Belinda Bencic and Maria Sakkari, the sixth and the eighth seed, to reach the final. Like, the list of achievements these two players had just goes on and on. And the spirit in which the final was played, there was some incredible tennis. Like, you think you're watching teenagers play and you think, oh, they're probably not going to be that good. But when you actually watch this game, like, the speed, the skill, some of the shot making was unbelievable from both players. They had a smile on their face for the whole time. They gave it absolutely everything. And even after the defeat, Leila Fernandez was so graceful and the way she dealt with it. And it was just, a lot is said about athletes and, you know, arrogance and all of these sorts of things. And they almost like expect to be this good and they expect that sort of treatment, but it was just so refreshing to see two young players just standing up to the occasion, delivering, giving us a final we all wanted. I mean, you know, in a neutral world, maybe a three-set thriller would have been ideal, but we got an amazing game of tennis, and just what an advert for the sport as well.
Yeah, I know it was a straight sets win, but like you say, people should not forget the contribution of Leila Fernandez in that match, because there was some properly talented stuff on show during that. And there was a match that essentially gripped the nation for obvious reasons, but I think it probably brought in a whole new legion of tennis fans and also Leila Fernandez fans at the same time, just for purely what we were getting to see. The fact that Channel 4 got to show it as well, big help, I think, in terms of sort of capturing the nation and making this one of the best moments. But from Edda Raducanu's perspective, she did something that was supposed to be impossible. And that's just makes this moment so much for myself anyway. If you do something that's supposed to be impossible, that deserves extra credit in the bank. She's gone from 345th in the world to now 19th in the world. That's quite a climb in terms of the rankings. And unsurprisingly, did win Spotty just over a week ago. It was probably the most obvious favourite that Spotty has had for quite some time. So not really a surprise when she won that. Someone did tweet me when I tweeted that she'd won it because I was there. And he tweeted me, his response was, she's only won one tournament. I'm like, this is not like an under 13s juniors competition. Put this into perspective, please. She's only won one tournament. She's only entered like, what, six or seven in her life as a senior. And it's the US Open. Again, something that should not have been able to happen, yet it did happen. And it does kind of showcase how much of an obvious talent she is. And who knows what she's going to do in the future, but I cannot wait to watch it. That's all I'll be saying. And same with Leila Fernandez too. Those two players are going to be quite the attraction in terms of for tennis fans over the years to come. So I think that's pretty conclusive that our best sporty moment right there is the US Open final and Emma Raducanu's subsequent victory. We'll take a quick pause there, but then we will come back for the most inspiring moment.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Okay, right, inspiring moment time. I know you always feel inspired watching some sport.
Always
inspired. As do I. Shall I take it away this time with my first?
Absolutely.
Runner up in terms of moments that inspired me anyway. And one of those that stuck to my mind, was kind of popped straight into my head when I was making this list, is when Italy's Gianmarco Tamberi and Qatar's Mutaz Barshin agreed to share the gold medal in the Olympic men's high jump competition. The two were locked in first place, and when given the option to settle with a jump off, Barshin suggested, how about two goals, which I think everyone managed to catch on camera. And that was instantly accepted. And it was probably one of the loveliest celebrations you will ever, ever see. And probably the most wholesome moment of the games, to be honest. Both athletes are good friends, so that kind of adds to the whole thing. And they've also had to come through a lot to get to that position. Tamberi in particular, who suffered a broken ankle that ruled him out of the 2016 Olympics, while Barshin has also had his own injury issues. That's just a wonderful display of sportsmanship, that one. And I know it brought out a fair few cranks on the social medias who really did not like the idea of shared gold and, you know, living in this world that winner must therefore take all and second is first loser and all that nonsense. But I think it taught everybody again that there is just more to life than winning, and being able to share that moment with your friend was probably one of the most inspiring moments for me anyway.
Yeah. Incredible scenes, wasn't it? And, you know, Barshin has won a lot in his career. So I think for him, the opportunity to sort of step on that top step of the podium with someone he's competed with that hasn't won the same amount that he has, I think, It was just lovely to see. And it's just a reminder that humans can actually be good people. I think as someone who in their job spends a lot of time on social media, your view of humanity certainly changes, which you shouldn't do, because let's face it, a lot of it's still a minority on, I mean, it seems like a majority a lot of the time, but it's a minority of people on Twitter compared to the rest of the world but it does shape your view in that all humans are asses. But actually, seeing a moment like that was just a reminder that actually there are good people out there and people who just think about others. And I mean, obviously for Barsham, it meant he was still getting gold as well, but the fact that, you know, he was happy to share that, and it's just an amazing story. And yeah. The Italian celebration was quite something.
Exactly.
Well.
It was lovely. And if you're one of the people who somehow thinks it's worth less because you're sharing it, by all means, you can hold that opinion, but try telling both of them that. And I think their opinions and living through it firsthand is probably somewhat more important here.
I'd do anything to win an Olympic medal. Doesn't matter what colour. So yeah, no. People can just grow up, I think, and accept the moment for what it was. My third most inspiring moment was Tom Daley finally winning that Olympic medal. He's gold medal he sought after for a while. He's before Rio, before Tokyo, had two bronzes, come close but never quite so far. And I think people were expecting a lot of him going into this Olympic Games. Potentially could be his last one. We don't know yet. And yeah, against the Chinese duo in the synchro, you always think the Chinese duo are just going to wipe the floor. So you're always like fighting for second place. But right from the off, Tom Daley and Matty Lee were right on their tails. I think the third dive didn't quite go so well. The Chinese pulled out a lead of about 15 points. But then the fourth dive, they absolutely nailed, and the Chinese slightly faltered, and then they got into the lead. And it's quite a British thing to sort of, once you get into the lead, panic and give it away. But they nailed their next dive, and then on the final dive produced a score of 101, which is just unbelievable. It's almost perfection, and a really difficult dive as well, and held on to win by just over a point, which is minuscule in diving terms. And he's been the nation's sort of sweetheart for so long. We all love Tom Daley. I'm sure there are probably some people who don't, but I think his popularity is incredible, and for what he stands for, both within the sport and then outside of sport as well. And finally, for everything all the pressure he's gone through, you know, since being a 12-year-old boy, to actually finally winning his first Olympic gold medal, and just seeing how much it meant to him and Matty Lee and all the coaches and everyone there. It's just a shame that there wasn't a crowd, because that would have been something special. But he did it, and then he backed it up with a bronze in the individual as well, which is another incredible feat, and did some knitting as well, and just what a bloke. And yeah, it's just lovely to see.
The picture of him, everyone's probably seen it, of him on the podium with a face mask gone, but you can see like a tear going down his cheek. Again, that's one of the pictures of the games, isn't it? And sums up exactly how much it means to him. My next runner-up, again, I'm kind of using your cheat code that you used in the last round of moments, brackets, moments. And it's also technically game at the end of 2020, but I'm going to give a huge shout-out to Arsenal and Scotland footballer Jen Beattie, who revealed right at the end of last year that she'd been diagnosed with breast cancer. Last week, or just over a week ago again, at Spotty, she was awarded the Helen Rollinson Award for what she had done, which was brilliant. And it just showcased to me how much she has put in, but also the difference she has made to a lot of people. This is where it comes into under inspiring moments territory, because she has spoken so openly about what she's been through and the fact that she continued to play while going through treatment, but also continued to speak out and using every opportunity and using her platform to encourage others to get screened. Think how many people that has made a difference to. And if you are going through breast cancer, which is obviously a horrible illness, my family have had personal experience having to deal with that. It's not at all nice. And to see someone like that just talk in the way she has been beyond inspiring throughout this entire year. So I don't think you'll find a more deserving winner of that Helen Rollison Award than Jen Beattie this year, and just an absolutely brilliant advocate. And kind of the happy side of this story as well, it's she is now cancer free, but is also still continuing to use her platform to speak out wherever possible. So big love to Jen Beattie from me anyway.
I think when you think of professional athletes, a lot of the time you think they're infallible.
And you think it's indestructible.
You think that they are another level to you. But as someone who's been fortunate enough to work with some of the best for 4.5 years, you actually realize they are humans just like you. They have the same interests as you. They eat the same food as you, probably a little bit healthier. But they do the same things that you do. It just happens that the sport that they're, or the job that they're really skilled in, is something that's on the public stage. And I think what Jen Beattie's done so well is that she's sort of made it clear, like, this can happen to me, but I'm just like a normal person and it can happen to anyone. So just get yourself checked. And it doesn't matter if you're in your 20s, if you're in your teens, if you're in your 30s, just get yourself checked if you think you need to, and just be aware of it. And there's also no shame in it as well. I still think there is some stigma attached to cancer and other illnesses when there really shouldn't be. And yeah, and the fact that she was able to continue playing as well is mind-boggling, really.
Oh yeah, you consider how much treatment takes out of you. The fact that she was still playing is remarkable.
My second most inspiring moment is something that's already been mentioned, and that's Bethany Shriver's gold. And then the celebration straight away with Kai White afterwards, just one of the moments of the games, the fact that he won silver a few minutes before, so he was obviously buzzing, but he stuck around to watch. And I think that's something we noticed a lot in a lot of the events, was because there weren't any crowd, you really noticed that when the other members of the teams came to watch. And I remember noticing it in the men's modern pentathlon, when Kate French was watching and all the support staff were watching. We saw it in swimming. We saw a lot of the Paralympics as well, actually, as well. And just the fact that he stuck around, he came and picked her up. She could barely stand up because she was so tired. And he was just like running around with her in his arms, just screaming and cheering. And it was just such an amazing moment to see that level of support. And then, to find out her story, to find out that she'd had to crowdfund, work as a teacher, everything that she'd gone through to then become an Olympic champion, then world champion, and just so humble with it as well. And the sport of BMX, not traditionally something we medal at much at the Olympics, but then Charlotte Worthington as well, and I'm sure other athletes I've forgotten off the top of my head, but just how well we've done at a sport that traditionally isn't associated with us, and that she's leading the way in that is just brilliant. And let's hope that we see plenty more golds in the future.
Definitely. The Charlotte Worthington example that you mentioned there, brilliant example of, again, as someone who's was working as a chef not all that long ago, is now an Olympic champion and produced a run that was just absolutely incredible. Thankfully on this podcast as well, so we can shout about that, a couple of years ago, but that's when we got the original story. So we knew what she'd been through, and now that she gets to introduce herself to this whole new audience in this brilliant way while showcasing her unreal talent, that's just what makes the Olympics so special to me anyway. But I'm a wholesome kind of person. I like all that tough. My winner for most inspiring moment, and I think I mention her about once every year on this review of the year, but it's Simone Biles. Usually it's her sporting prowess that kind of gets a lot of the attention and the spotlight, but this time it was the way she kind of redrew that spotlight on mental health during the Tokyo 2020 games, where she withdrew from 5 of her 6 finals. Basically explained that she had the twisties. So that's a mental block where gymnasts lose their orientation in the air. And unsurprisingly, that is obviously quite dangerous if you're in that position in the air and you're losing your orientation. But she showed so many, and it's what you said before, it's just reminding people that athletes are not these indestructible machines, as much as we like to think they are. They are human and they go through all sorts of things, whether it's physical injuries or just trying to work through stuff that's going on in your head. And she's just proved to be another pioneer in this way yet again. You think of all she's done in her career, sporting wise, but then also you add the US gymnastics abuse case side of things to what she's experienced as well, and the way she has dealt with that and the way she's dealt with it with her teammates. And then to go through this and shine a spotlight on this, but to do it in such a measured, down-to-earth kind of way, evidently she was not in a good place. I think she said afterwards that she should probably have just withdrawn before the games even started. But to deal with that and then come back during the games to perform again, it's just another example of why Simone Biles is just something else in terms of an athlete and as a human being. And it wouldn't be right for me not to list off what she has achieved in her career, be it 4 Olympic golds and a whopping 19 world championship titles. She's going to go down in history as one of the greatest pioneers in sport, not just gymnastics, but just as an Olympic sport in general. There is only one Simone Biles.
Yeah, just the fact that she was even competing at all with the twisties. And it also, it drew a light on something that we didn't know about in gymnastics. You know, we see these athletes nailing all these routines and the big tournaments, and just think, yeah, that's, you know, what they're paid to do. But actually, you know, everybody gets mental blocks. And I mean, the twisties is a very dangerous mental block, for want of a better phrase. And the fact that she was still able to compete and still win a bronze medal, in the beam, and the beam is, I hate watching it because it just looks so painful to fall off, and it's such a nerve wracking event to watch. So yeah, she's just. She's one of those athletes that you just, if you don't have respect for her and if you can't appreciate what she's done, then there's something wrong with you, let's be honest, because just incredible what she stands for and just how good she is. And yeah, she's just one of those, the words don't do her justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another athlete for me who words don't do justice is in a sport that I admittedly don't know much about, but it's actually what he achieved off the pitch this year is what I found so inspiring, and that's Kevin Sinfield. So his close friend, Rob Burrows, as we all know, is bravely battling against motor neurone disease. It's such a cruel illness. But Rob himself is doing amazing work. And this year, Kevin Sinfield, having run 7 marathons in 7 days in 2020 and raised $2.7 million for motor neurone disease charity, he ran 101 miles in 24 hours back in November, and raised another at least £2 million for charity. And just, I mean, he was an incredible rugby league player, won so much during his career. But I think he's proving just what a human being he is, what a thoughtful, pioneering man he is. So as he was running these 101 miles in 24 hours, I think he was having to average a minimum of 7 kilometers an hour, which, you know, if you're running a 10K is slow, but when you're running for 24 hours straight, averaging 7K an hour is just phenomenal.
24 hours is a long time, people.
I get knackered after running for half an hour, just like 48 times that. The work he's doing for his friend, for a charity, it's just another level. It's just, you just, again, you know, someone who spends a lot of my time on social media, as I mentioned before, my view of humanity has dipped and isn't very positive. And we see a lot of stories coming out, about cheese and wine evenings, that just think like it's embarrassing to be human, and just the way that we are with environmental change and things like that. You know, the fact that we've got some countries not signing up to things, they're looking after their own things rather than the view of the whole planet. It really does give a negative view on or what you think about humanity. But then there are people like Simone Biles, like Kevin Sinfield, Bethany Shriver, Jen Beattie, that actually restore that faith that there are good people out there doing amazing things, and that's where we need to put our energy, is into supporting them.
Exactly. That's where sport makes us smile a lot of the time, just because of people like that, like you say.
Sport also makes us cry as well.
Moving on then to team of the year, which I put brackets, not England, who did win the sports personality team of the year. And as much as I got caught up in Euro 2020 brackets 21 fever, like everybody else, they were one, probably the only team on that category that did not actually win anything. And kudos to Gareth Southgate as well, because he said it at the actual ceremony. He was like, he's very conscious that they didn't actually win anything. A lot of the other teams did. But yeah, I'll get that little piece of personal vendetta against the results at Spotty out of the way, because I don't think they were deserving, even though they were evidently a good team. But anyway, do you want to give me your first runner-up?
Yeah, my first runner-up, and this wouldn't be an annual review of the year if I hadn't gone slightly rogue, but I feel like I haven't gone too rogue. It is technically a team, and it is the Great Britain's 4x100 meters Olympic gold medal medley swimming team. I think this is the first time or second time the event had been held, and I don't know about you, but I've absolutely loved the introduction of mixed relays across sports. Obviously, in the triathlon, we won a gold. Yeah. And saw in mixed relays.
Helps when you win some of them.
Yeah, the athletics as well. But for some reason, this one really stands out in my head. And they set the Olympic record in the qualification, in the heat, with Kathleen Dawson, Adam Peaty, James Guy and Freya Anderson. And then they went even quicker, more than a second quicker in the final, with Anna Hopkin coming in for Freya Anderson on that final leg. And I think Anna Hopkin deserves so much credit for what she did, because Dawson, Petey and Guy put her in a position where she was in the lead going into that final leg. But the quality and the caliber of athlete chasing her down. So she had the Chinese Yang Junjuan chasing her down. She had the Australian Emma McKeon, who's an unbelievable swimmer. And then the Americans had Caleb Dressel as well, the fastest man in the world, all chasing down. And Anna Hopkin, who I think it was just her first Olympic Games. You know, she's only burst onto the scene in the last couple of years with quite a few European medley medals, but never sort of individual. And she held on. She set a 52-second final 100 meter, under some severe pressure, and held off some incredible competition to take the gold by just over a second, which doesn't sound like a lot, and it really isn't a lot. And they just seemed, all four of them, just like four normal human beings who were just excellent at swimming, and they felt relatable. And they were just, the way they did their interviews afterwards, they were interesting to listen to. And they were just humble about the victory. Obviously, they knew they'd won and they were really happy, but they weren't arrogant. They weren't showing off. And this, the team camaraderie was amazing to see. And I think I love seeing mixed relays, because it's just something different. It's something fun. You can tell the athletes are enjoying themselves, but you can also tell they're taking it really seriously. And the caliber of the athletes in that field as well, you know, Emma McKeon, Caleb Dressel, Adam Peaty, James Guy, like some really, really good swimmers. It wasn't like a B-string team at all. So just a brilliant moment to watch. And yeah, excited to see, you know, what can we defend that title in 3 years' time?
Fingers crossed. And I'll add my runner-up on the back of that, because if you're stretching the definition of a team with that, then I'm really stretching the definition of team with just British swimming. Which is my first category here, my first nomination, incorporating the mixed relay team that you have just mentioned, who, like I said, their achievement was brilliant, brilliant to watch, even though it was, again, middle of the night and I was kind of catching up in the morning, just reliving it. And like you say, seeing the interviews afterwards, really, really something special. But British swimming as a whole just had a simply brilliant Tokyo Games, didn't they? 8 medals in the Olympics, 4 of which were gold. And again, growing up, we're just not used to seeing that. We're used to seeing individually brilliant swimmers, but not just that level of success across the board, to be honest. Some brilliant individuals to shout about. Adam Peaty mentioned, Tom Dean, James Guy, Duncan Scott. And then even at the Paralympic Games, it brought us new stars like Ellie Challis, And it's just brilliant for British swimming. And I'm really looking forward to seeing where it can go. Like you say, possibly retaining that mixed relay title in 3 years' time would be a brilliant, brilliant achievement. But just seeing how healthy British swimming is and almost the recognition it's getting. Again, I kind of, having Adam Peaty, someone like that, who is so, so widely known by the public and is such a brilliant spokesperson. And again, harking back to, just in case anyone didn't notice, I was at Spotty a week and a half ago and got the chance, us as the few journalists who did manage to dodge Omicron to make it, got to speak to Adam Peaty afterwards. And that's all he wanted to talk about after the actual ceremony was done, is just what, how he wanted to use this moment to capitalize on it, to keep growing swimming and to keep it in as strong a place as possible. And he was talking about the grassroots and making sure leisure centers were funded and that everyone had access to a swimming pool where possible. There's a lot of financial challenges a lot of people are facing at the moment, whether it's at, you know, local government level, whatever it might be. But that was just his focus. And that's, for him, that's where he sees his life now. He's got the Olympic glory to his name already, but as much as he's going to continue with the sport, it's all about just pushing it and spreading that message even further. And the more people you're going to get into it, the better your facilities. It's only natural that your team is going to be successful when you combine it with some good coaching and some quality funding. So huge credit to British swimming, like I say, for pulling off a real Olympic Games to remember.
I mean, British swimming got battered after London 2012 because it was one of the few failures of those home games. And I think they won a gold. I think Michael Jamieson silver was the best medal and a couple of bronzes for Becky Adlington. And it really wasn't a great games, and they got battered after that. And they've turned it around. They've not only found the talent, but they've also nurtured it and brought it through to excel on the big stage as well. So for Freya Anderson was someone that has been on our radar for 3 years, I think now, as being like the next best thing. And the fact that she can come through and she can help win a gold medal in that 4x100 meter medley team, for an example, you know, I think that the way they're now bringing them through into the top tier is of swimming is much better. And I think they're just better prepared to excel on the biggest stage. And yeah, I mean, the Paralympic swimming team has always been amazing, but to see the Olympic swimming team as well now starting to win a lot of medals, and Duncan Scott with his ridiculous tally of medals, Tom Dean, Adam Peaty, James Guy, all of these swimmers, and just it's brilliant to see. Sticking with the Olympic theme, and given that I work with them, I think this is no surprise, but my second runner-up and almost victors for Team of the Year is the GB women's hockey team that won bronze in Tokyo. So where the amount of stuff that's been thrown at this squad throughout this whole Olympic cycle, you know, the pressure is always going to be on them being reigning Olympic champions. I think seven key members of that Olympic gold medal winning squad from Rio retired straight away afterwards, or I think, you know, 5 or 6 of them retired and a couple retired subsequently. This squad has been through so much in the last few years, and it's been difficult. There's been a lot of bad results, a lot of bad tournaments, a lot of disappointment, and a lot of injuries to key players. There's been a lot of change. But in the last, I've always felt that the squad had the potential to do something special. And watching them preparing in that last year leading up to the games, Casey Glynn, I think, coming in as assistant coach has made a massive impact on that squad. That going forwards, I was watching them in training and thinking, like, previously I watched them in training and the shooting drills were sometimes a little bit painful to record, but just watching the way in which they were now attacking, the confidence they had on the ball, I admitted only training, but I was just thinking some good changes coming in with this squad. They played a couple of Pro League games in last November against Belgium and the Netherlands, and they were missing 10 players through injury, and which in hockey is a big number of players to be missing, and they still competed really well. They beat the Belgians once, they drew with the Dutch, who are the best team in the world. They did get beaten fairly heavily 3-0 by the Dutch, but they also drew with and beat the Belgians as well. So I was thinking then it was a good sign, and played some Pro League games in the summer against Germany and the USA, which both teams were under strength, and they did well in those, and then England flopped at the Euros for various reasons, injuries being another one. I was thinking, oh God, like what's going to happen with Great Britain? But there was just something in the squads, and you just had that feeling that they had the capability of doing something. And going through the group stages, starting with a loss to Germany, having dominated the game, their opening game was frustrating. But I think if you're going to lose, get it out of the way first up. They then followed up with big victories, 4-1 wins over India and South Africa, which was a big statement of intent. A 1-0 loss to the Dutch in their fourth group game was disappointing because they could quite easily have drawn, if not won the game. They played really well, but it was a good sort of like, yeah, this is squad's in a good place. Beat Ireland 2-0 in the final group game to qualify, setting up a quarterfinal with Spain. The nerves against the Spanish got the better of them. They gave away a couple of goals, went to a penalty shootout. Maddie Hinch did Maddie Hinch things, just single-handedly won the penalty shootout, which was amazing to see because I know Mads has had a few difficult years post-Olympics, and I know she struggled inside her own head, and she's taken some time away from international sport. She's quite openly questioned herself if she's good enough still. And I think in that game, she put off some amazing saves in the game itself, and then also, you know, to do what she did in the shootout was amazing. And you know, Mads is a wonderful human being. So just to see her doing it that well was brilliant. And then, yeah, a bit of a thumping in the semi-final against the Dutch. We were just not good enough on the day. But then to come out and win the bronze against India, going 2-0 up in the 25th minute, then conceding 3 goals in 5 minutes before half-time to be trading 3-2. You know, when that's happening, you're just thinking, we can't not win a medal. And Holly Perm-Webb stepping up, scoring the equaliser early in the second half before Gracie Ballsden fired home a corner to win us the game 4-3. And it was just an amazing game. And the celebrations, I think, for me, the moment that stood out were the celebrations afterwards. The final whistle went, and I personally was absolutely buzzing because all I've wanted to do since I joined is cover an Olympic medal. I'd love to have covered two, but it didn't quite happen for the men. To see the celebrations, to see how much it meant, to see girls that had won the Olympic gold medal 5 years before celebrating and showing more emotion at having won a bronze medal with this team was incredible. There's one lovely photo of Sarah Jones and Fiona Crackles just cuddling and crying, and it's just, that's how much it means. And yeah, it was I know the girls well, and for a lot of them who won gold, they've turned around and said to me or said publicly that the bronze meant so much more because of what the squad had been through, all the adversity they had to overcome, all the doubters. To win that bronze medal for us was as good as winning a gold, really. And I think this is an exciting time for the squad. Not too many players at the moment have retired. There's going to be a similar setup going forward for the next cycle. Hopefully a few exciting youngsters coming in as well. And it was an English, Scottish and Welsh squad as well, which I know is really crucial for us in Great Britain. We don't want to just be an England-dominated squad. We want all three nations represented. And yeah, just amazing scenes, and they deserved it so much. And also, it's bloody good fun covering an Olympic medal. You know, I started at 2 a.m., didn't finish until 5 p.m. and didn't take a break. But honestly, the most fun I've had in the job.
I had a feeling that might sneak its way into the review somehow, but very rightly, as you say, think of all the adversity the squad went through to actually come away with a bronze medal. It suddenly becomes a lot more worth it, doesn't it, when you get to have that to your name. My next team that I will shout about is Barcelona's women's football's team. So taking a little bit of a curveball here, but I just don't think you can really ignore what they have managed to do, where they've essentially established themselves as just the best team in women's football right now, by some distance. They completed the treble in 2021 before thrashing Chelsea 4-0. I think a lot of us tuned in to that Champions League final, hoping to see a bit of a tussle, but Chelsea was completely outclassed by Barcelona. They are so, so good. In the Primera division, this is the top league in Spain, Barca lost one, scored 167 goals and conceded just 15 times as they went on to win the title last season. This season, they have played 15, won 15, scored 86 times and conceded four times. So I think they're very well on their way to retaining that league title, but it just shows just what a class above they are from not only every other team in that division right now, but probably every other team in Europe. And we've been so used to fans in women's football to team like Lyon dominating for so long on the European stage. And Barcelona have evidently just, you can say a lot about the club itself at the moment because it's not being run entirely correctly. But from a women's side of things, they've just invested so much in that side, be it time, be it coaching, be it just actually dedicating themselves to being the best team they can possibly be. And it's starting to really show now. They are very, very good to watch and have some brilliant, brilliant players. And I think that is really, having them push on to such heights shows you exactly how good women's football can be. And I want to see a whole lot more other clubs trying to push themselves to be in that same position a lot of the time.
I think it's just, it's similar with the England women's rugby team, is that it, they're showing when you start treating female athletes in the same way you treat the men, just how good they can become. And just,
yes,
it's just a shame that they're so clearly better than everyone else. You'd like them to have some proper competition, especially in their domestic league, but hopefully that forces people to actually sit up and think, right, we need to invest in women's sport. And it's not in a perfect place. We've seen what happened with Coventry United last week. A professional, semi-professional team in the second tier just folded overnight, and there's still a long way to go, but hopefully people can see the value in investing in female athletes, which it sounds mind-blowing that you actually have to say that. So moving on to my team of the year, and it's a moment that when thinking about this category just came into my head straight away, actually before the hockey, and that's the GB wheelchair rugby team, who won their first ever Paralympic medal and actually their first ever Paralympic gold as well. What a sport that is, by the way. So addictive to watch. It's like netball in that it's very end-to-end, but it's much more violent. But it's also incredibly skillful, and for Great Britain to win was brilliant. And I didn't watch too much of the group stages. I watched a couple of games. I watched the end of the narrow victory against Canada in the first game, and I saw the narrow loss to the US in the third game. And then they got through, they beat Japan in the semis, got through to the final against the USA, and what a game that was. So evenly contested throughout most of it. The US had some incredible players, and Great Britain had some amazing players. And what I love is that all of the athletes have such different stories as to how they've got to where they are now. And that's one of the best bits about the Paras. And so many, different individuals, different characters all coming together in this love of one sport, which is a brilliant sport to watch. I'll definitely be watching more of it from now on. And what a spectacle that final was. What a game it was. And for Great Britain to win the gold was just incredible. And it was great to be able to watch it all live on Channel 4. And a shout out as well to Kylie Grimes. So wheelchair rugby is a mixed sport, but traditionally there's a lot more men play it than women. But Kylie Grimes became the first woman of any nation to win a Paralympic gold medal in wheelchair rugby. She didn't get on the pitch in the final, but she did play a bit in the group stages. And just brilliant to see, brilliant team. And just really enjoyable watching them play with a smile on their faces, taking it competitive, being really competitive, being really good, but just the manner in which it was played was just the joy to watch. And it's always nice to beat America or something.
Definitely the cherry on top of the cake there. My team of the year, who we have already touched on so far in this episode, is the Red Roses, England women's rugby team. Who in my mind should have won Spotty Team of the Year, but hey ho, they've enjoyed a second successive calendar year unbeaten, won 18 tests in a row, including those victories over New Zealand that you alluded to earlier on in the episode, which is just a brilliant, brilliant achievement. In 2021, in total, they scored 57 tries and they conceded 10, which is quite a differential there, as well as securing a third consecutive Six Nations title as well. I also think the fact that them being on the BBC and you getting to see their games now on free-to-air TV is another massive step in the growth of the game. I won't repeat some of the points you mentioned before about just how good it is for women's rugby in this country that we're now in this position with the support that the national team is getting, and then you're getting this filtering through of players at a domestic level too. But to also present it to people now and to showcase it and to get so many people invested, they were racking up some brilliant viewing figures on the weekends when they were playing. So it goes into the age-old argument of, you can't see it, then you can't be it. Now people are seeing it, so you can, and that is only a positive for the growth of women's rugby in this country. But you do need to have a successful team to actually build that platform off of, and that England team is just at a completely different level right now. And like you say, I hope they have not peaked too early before the World Cup, but on the evidence of the last couple of years, that is looking very, very promising. And by my mind, if you are pretty much perfect, you can't really do better than an unbeaten season with all those statistics to their name, then that is probably pretty deserving of being team of the year. So go on, England women's rugby team, 2021, or my 2021 team of the year.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the players' podcast.
Finally, last category is athlete of the year. Some of whom may have already popped up every now and again on this particular episode, but are no less deserving. My first runner-up, joint runner-up, is Simone Biles. Again, if anyone hasn't noticed, I am completely just in awe of the woman. And again, what more can you say on top of what I added earlier? Pioneer, goat in her sport. And now someone who basically showed the world that, you know what, winning medals is not the be-all and end-all of life and an athlete's career. There is a whole lot more towards it. And just that being someone who's pushed that general shift towards recognizing that athletes are still human beings at the same time. And we've seen a whole bunch of other athletes who have come out and just been more open and reflective. And I think it puts people in a healthier state of mind at the same time when you can acknowledge when you are having a bad time, you can afford to take that time out for yourself and look after yourself, because we are, not just from an athlete's perspective, but probably as a society, notoriously bad at doing that. So it's a good lesson for a lot of us, particularly when you consider what 2021 as a year has thrown at us, that it is okay to take some time out for yourself, you know. So Simone Biles, as ever, proving to be a class above.
Absolutely. My first runner-up, I could have had so many athletes on this list for Athlete of the Year. Some athletes that we haven't included, Dame Sarah Storey, Lee Pearson, Fiona Crackles from a hockey point of view, the list goes on and on and on. Zoe Allcroft from the Red Roses. But for me, I've actually gone for someone who's the future, hopefully, of British Paralympic swimming, and that's Maisie Summers-Newton. So for those of us who don't follow para swimming that much, she's a completely new name, but she burst onto the scene. She won two Paralympic gold medals in the 100 meter breaststroke and the 200 meter medley. And again, she was just fun. Just a really sweet, kind, intelligent, funny, humble human being off the outside of the pool. But in it, she was just a class above, just brilliant, brilliant swimmer. And it just bodes really, really well that for her future, that, you know, she's this good at 19. How good is she going to be in three years' time in Paris? How good is she going to be when she's only in her mid-20s at LA? Just again, one of those athletes that you just watch and you just enjoy watching them because they're so good and they're so likable as a personality and fun. And the celebrations, you know, they spent a lot of time at her home club in Northampton interviewing her coaches, her family, her friends, people that swam alongside her. Just the support she had was incredible, and just one of those stories that you couldn't help but enjoy watching during the Paralympic Games. And there was a lot of them. There's so many incredible athletes that we are fortunate enough to be British.
Absolutely. Likewise, looking forward to seeing what she does in the coming years. There should be a lot of potential there. My next runner-up on the category is Rachel Blackmore, another absolute superstar in 2021 who did win the World Sports Star of the Year award at Spotty. She did win it at Manchester Airport because it was a very foggy day, so she ended up accepting it in probably not the environment she was expecting, but she did manage to make it to the venue by the end of the night and managed to grab a chat with her afterwards. Really, really lovely person. The 32-year-old became the first female rider to win the Grand National at Aintree with victory on Manila Times. That was back in April. And she also became the first woman to be leading jockey at the Cheltenham Festival in March, where she racked up 6 victories. Brilliantly down-to-earth person. She did forget to take the security tag off of her dress on Spotty Night, which she showed us all after the ceremony. But again, it's just another pioneer in women's sport. This has been a great year for women's sport, side point. But again, just abnormal, so down to earth, and just such a great person to talk to. And absolutely loves her sport. You can just tell that just filters through her. And again, she is someone who it might not have been what she in her primary focus was at all, but just by being who she is and loving her sport in the way she does, she will have inspired so many young girls into thinking, you know what, if I want to be a jockey, I can go and be a jockey and I can be good at it and I can win. And it's just the wider ramifications of her achievements mean so much to a lot of people. And she's just had an absolutely brilliant 2021. You can't take that away from her.
Yeah, and it's just so nice to just quickly click on the BBC Sport website, go on the horse racing page, and one of the lead stories is that she won at Leopardstown a couple of days ago. Like, wasn't a particularly big race or anything like that, but now she's the name, she's the leading name, and that's so good to see in a sport where, as we've seen in the case of Bryony Frost and what she's had to been subjected to by a fellow rider, it's still so difficult to be a woman. Generally, when you think about equestrian, I can name you more female Olympic and Paralympic athletes than I could male, just because they seem to have had more success in my sort of lifetime. But when you think of horse racing, how many female jockeys can you name? Not many. And it's again, as I mentioned with the Bryony Frost case, it's so difficult for women to get into, even on the inside, let alone from the outside. So yeah, to see what Blackmore has done and continues to do is amazing. My runner-up, second runner-up for Athlete of the Year, someone we've already mentioned quite a bit, is Emma Raducanu. And the reason probably she didn't win my Athlete of the Year is because I tried to mix it up a little bit and I tried not to have two winners in the same thing. So I'd already mentioned the US Open Finals, my best sporting moment. So I thought, I can't have Raducanu as my Athlete of the Year. But what she achieved, first qualifier to win a major final, first British woman to win a singles title since 1977, youngest champion since 2004, lowest ranked player to win a final since 2009 is incredible. And thing is, the US Open wasn't a one-off. She actually started it, as seemingly everyone forgets, but a few months earlier at Wimbledon, where, given a wild card, no one had heard of her before, she gets through to the fourth round as a qualifier, or as a wild card, which is just unbelievable. And then she sort of goes a little bit quiet for a few months and then comes back with a bang at the US Open. And yeah, there's been a few questions, criticisms, blah, 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 about her lack of success since. She's only played a couple of tournaments and changing coaches and what have you. And everyone seems to have an opinion. Everyone seems to think that they know what's best for her. But actually, let's just let her get on with it. She's probably going to make mistakes, but she's human, of course. So, but what she did, galvanising a nation to watch tennis, to watch female tennis, and just how humble she was with it. She lives she grew up not too far from me as well. So there's obviously that Southeast London bias as well. Just brilliant. And I really hope that this is the start of a long and successful career in which we get to watch a lot more exciting tennis and just see her going from strength to strength.
I agree with everything you said, which is why she is my Athlete of the Year. So even though you had the local link, that clearly wasn't enough for you to bump her into number one spot. But yeah, agree with everything you said. And quite frankly, short and sweet reason, but if you do something that is supposed to be impossible, that puts you pretty high up on my list, to be honest. And what she did do was just completely unheard of. And I think we said at the time, it's not just one of the greatest sporting moments of the year. It's one of the greatest sporting moments, full stop. Like, just period. This does not happen. And like you say, people do love to have an opinion. But who doesn't make mistakes at the age of 19 in whatever walk of life? And she will, like everybody else at that age, be figuring out what works best for her. But to have already racked up a Grand Slam title at that age, at this period in her career, no one would have expected that. And it's just so much excitement as to what she could possibly go on to achieve. So yeah, the way she's gripped the nation, what she managed to do, Emma Raducanu is my athlete of the year.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I have picked someone else.
Go on, pitch someone it else to me.
Who's already been mentioned was also up in the running for Spotty, and that is Adam Peaty. And I think the reason why I've gone for him is because he's so un-British in the way that, as Brits, we love being the underdog. We love winning from absolutely nowhere. And we've done that on so many different occasions, but we never seem to dominate any sport or any mainstream sport, I should say, that we're involved in. Think about cricket, men's cricket team were number one for a couple of years and then have sort of dropped off, and quite famously dropped off in the last few months. The England men's rugby team won a World Cup and, you know, never dominated a sport. The men's football team, the women's football team, the women's cricket team, we never dominate for a sustained period of time. But that's exactly what Adam Peaty's done. He's not just winning Olympic gold medals. He's winning everything. He's winning every race he's involved in, on an individual basis and on, quite often on a medley basis as well. And he holds, I think, the 20 fastest times of all time. He set the new world record out a stupid number of times. You know, if he would be a more than a, I think he's a three-time Olympic gold medalist, but if the 50-meter breaststroke was in, he'd be a five-time Olympic gold medalist because he would have won both of those. The man is just phenomenal, and he's like a robot. Just what he's achieved in a sport and a society where we don't often dominate is just insane. And the way he keeps coming back and keeps doing it, there's going to be a point in his career where he probably will drop off. But the fact that I'm saying that's such a British mentality is because that never really happened with Michael Phelps, did it? It was only right at the very end. He's just, and the way he's now speaking about how he wants grassroots swimming to be improved and enhanced, and the way he wants everybody to enjoy the sport that he loves, and the work he's starting to do into making that happen is amazing. And there were so many amazing athletes, but just for me, because he's so un-British in his domination of swimming and what he's achieved and what he's going to achieve, he's my athlete of the year.
Very well argued. But, I mean, huge credit to Adam Peaty. Love Adam Peaty. Is not my athlete of the year. But hey, everyone who's listening, obviously decide amongst yourselves, chat to your friends, chat to people who are not your friends, chat to people who are in the middle of the street, I don't care. And you can decide amongst yourselves as to who is rightly deserving of athlete of the year, and indeed any of the other categories we have talked about on this particular pod. But that concludes 2021 for both us. It's almost the end of the year for everybody else. Oh, I really hope we get some similarly exciting, wonderful moments in 2022 on the sports side of things. I'm sure we will. There is plenty to come. But other than that, I suppose it's a happy new year to everybody, including yourself. I hope you're doing something fun.
You too. Just seeing off what's been personally a rubbish year. But there's been so much sport, and just, you know, the amount of stuff to look forward to next year.
Exactly.
Including a women's Euros in this country, which I have tickets for, which I'm very excited about.
Exactly. Just one highlight there of a multitude of other exciting things on the horizon. So 2022, new year, new hope, and all that sort of stuff. We will catch everyone next year. Do enjoy yourselves. Take care. Look after those around you, look after yourself, and you'll be hearing from us very, very soon. Goodbye.